Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm on SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And, of course, there is also the YouTube stream that I broadcast on. And if you want to join us there on the chat room, that is fine, too. I will be keeping an eye on that, though, as I mentioned before, that most of the traffic, most of the people who join us are on TalkShoe. Usually there's three people in the chat room, but I want more people there. So please come and join us. Moving on to the contact info. We, of course, if you want to contact moi, you can contact me via my email address. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to, you can reach me on Skype. My Skype ID is Franz Games, FranzGames. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter. My account for the podcast is SFUOnCall, so you can see all the announcements for each and every upcoming episode. Also, you want to follow me on my personal account. My personal account is Paul Franz. That's PaulFranz. And that's on the. You can follow me there. You can listen to me, talk about, in some cases, social issues of the day, usually from a Catholic perspective, and also, of course, tech and all that kind of wonderful stuff, and sometimes about Starfleet battles and those things that hop up about those, especially important information about that. And, of course, my other account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames, which I do client updates and other things that are happening at Franz Games. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned up podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net, including a feed at sfuoncall.com. So if you want to go to there, you can find us there. And, of course, there's a quick news from A to B this week. Steve Cole returned to the office for a few hours a day, which he mentioned last week that he was going to be able to do while he was recovering from surgery. He worked on some Shapeways, some fiction, and also a backlog of reports and emails, because Lord knows we all get backlog with emails when we're away from the office. Steve Patrick, on the other hand, was working on SMB updates, big surprise, and also the Gordon Mess Starship book. And Gene, has been working on the GURPS Prime Directive revision, and if you follow her on Facebook, you'll see how much she's been working on that, including some issues with, like, space combat. This past week, she hasn't mentioned it all that much when it comes to her trials and tribulations, though she has definitely mentioned that she has been working on the GURPS Prime Directive revision, which I can't wait for that to occur. That also, of course, the Merchants of the Federation. That's another one that I can't wait to see when that comes out. And as soon as it comes out, I will be reading it. And if I can, hopefully, man, I would love to have it in time for Gamers of Summer, which would be great, because then I can see if I can read through it and get familiar with it, maybe even grab Barry and we can play a game or two of it if we find enjoyment of that. And moving on to the SFB Online tournament. The Masters Tournament, we're still stuck at 5, finished round game 2. I actually have contacted one of my round 3 opponents, and I need to discuss it a little more with the person, which was Roger Reardon. Roger Reardon signed up for the tournament around 9 months ago and didn't realize he was still in the tournament. He totally forgot he had even signed up for the tournament, because he had a bye on round 1 and his round 2 opponent, and then never really conversed. So at least that's what it seems like. So he's kind of there, and I just email him. I'm pretty sure he wanted to make sure they still wanted to be involved in the tournament. In which case, because if he does, in that case, I will give the win to Roger, and I'll play Roger. I have to wait and see. When it comes to Rad 48, we actually have two round three games completed, and that sets up for actually a round four game, which is going to be a civil war with two hydrants, which should make things really interesting, to say the very least. And hopefully, they will grab the updated clients so they can, one of them can use the stripes. Because that's one thing I did release a couple weeks back, which was an update to the client, which actually has stripes for the counter. So that, and this is a perfect situation where stripes would work out quite well. Moving on to the library report, this one is my fault. There was no progress, though we do have more converted Peladines. I did not have time to actually process those Peladines. So the complete conversion actually is higher than currently is. Currently it's still stuck at 2,434. You have to be converted 891, leaving a percentage complete of 73.2. That actually should be higher, but it's my fault. Sorry, I apologize. I will get going on that probably tomorrow, if not the day after tomorrow. One of those, I should be able to get through processing the Paladine pretty quickly. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to the Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got me, we got Dave, we got Russ. Russ, who's will be back in a bit. He had to go out, but anyway, you got me. I'm assuming that's why you are listening to this wonderful and wondering podcast who I go off the deep end. Topics for this evening are many and varied, and they probably will change as the night goes on. Big surprise there. Today we're actually going to the beginning topic for this evening is actually something that came up, and I was gonna say it's the whining moment, but no, I understand where he's coming from. Ted Faye approached me. It's posted on the discussion board, which I like. You know, I like the discussion board. Let me just get this off my chest, and then we can move on. I would love to post things on Facebook and manage the things on Facebook and do all those kind of wonderful, beautiful things on Facebook. My only problem with Facebook is it sucks as a forum. As a way of people starting threads of discussions and then having people allow them the ability to manage, or more to the degree to be notified of what's happening in the threads and actually follow the discussion in the threads. It's just not a good thing. If you want a better discussion platform, go to Reddit. They're better about threading there than Facebook is. Facebook, it's not, the interface is not designed to actually have a normal conversation with people. It's not. I don't know what, you know, it's really awful, you know. So, you know, I think a better one would be actually be Slack. Actually, that was weird. I was actually listening to a video tonight, tech thing. I like tech thing. I watch it every once in a while. I rarely have an opportunity. I'm usually doing so many other things. But the one thing that it was interesting that they were talking about, of course, Mastodon being the more open version of it's a federated social media, a social network, which is great because then that means no single entity owns that network. But obviously, Mastodon is not as well known. It has much smaller, i.e., like 10 times or 100 times. No, it's 1,000 times. 1,000 times smaller than Facebook. You know, it's got like 1.7 million, versus Facebook has like 1.7 billion. Or 6 billion, sorry. But anyway, doesn't matter. But anyway, so Patrick Norton was just mentioning really quick that how they went from a mailing list to Slack. I think they went from mailing list to Slack and then back to using a mailing list to communicate. And it's like, wow. Yeah, well. And unfortunately, it's hard to get people talking on a mailing list. You know, I'd be happy to talk about things on a mailing list, but you know, people have to actually start posting things. It's one of those things. It's momentum. You have to keep things going. And obviously, currently, Facebook has the most momentum. Big surprise. But anyhow, moving forward out of the realm of Facebook and social media, because we do have a page for this podcast called SFU On Call, which is actually on Facebook. I forgot to post the link this time and mention the topic. I apologize for that. But I forgot to do that this time. I mainly posted on Twitter and on the discussion board. Those are definitely the two main ones. If you want to have the latest YouTube feed, follow me on one of the three accounts on Twitter, whether it's Franz Games, SFU On Call, or Paul Franz. Follow one of them. If you want the least amount of traffic, follow SFU On Call. That's mainly for the podcast. So it's really quiet. You won't get a lot of noise out of it. That's one of the people mentioned about Twitter and social media and go, oh yeah, it's, you know, I can't keep up with it all. It's like, well, cut back on who you follow. You know, because I think it was some Leo Laporte was mentioning how he just can't keep up with Twitter and it's just too noisy. And I see all this crap. And it's like, dude, trim down who you are following. That will cut back on how much traffic you see. There's a couple of guys, one guy, I think it was, John Dvorak, found out, basically, he posts constantly. And I'm sorry, that might be great for some people. That sucks for me. I prefer people that are low traffic generators. That's the people I prefer. Maybe 2-3 times a day, that's fine. And be something of more of authentic, you know, engagement, not just retweeting someone else's stuff. You know. But anyhow, sorry, I got sidetracked there. But anyway, get back to Ted Fay. And one thing he mentioned is that he really liked to get, if there's any way, he was asking me, is there any way to basically have the second gen SSDs back again? You know, they'd be willing to pay, you know, high, you know, extra price, you know, to have it available. And I basically told him that it really most part it was not up to me, that we're doing the conversion, and he understood that we're doing the conversion because ADB said it, and ADB actually replied on that topic and mentioned that we've lost too much money, and we actually, it might not seem like it, but the business is growing, you know, which is, I'm shocked to hear. I thought he was just maintaining, but he says it's growing. I have to believe him because why would he lie? there's lots of reasons to lie, really, for that category. But I have a tendency to believe him. I don't think he would say that they were growing if they weren't growing. I would say, as I say, he wouldn't mention it. You know, the whole omission thing. But even so, you know, it's a big amount of money just going down the tubes by doing, because you'll never make it back for those people. Now, here's the one thing that I disagree with him, and I'll mention it. And anyone who's actually listened to me long enough over the past almost 11 years now, will probably have heard me said, and that is that I feel like the damage caused to Steve Cole's business from it isn't as great as he thinks. Because, yes, okay, initial outlay, initial damage, yes. But I have a hard time believing that so many people were constantly getting new accounts just to steal the SSDs. Because there's a point where it's like, why are you doing it? Why are you stealing the SSDs again? They're the same SSDs that were there a year ago. You know? We stop, you know, the library hasn't grown hardly at all. Yes, we have some new ones, you know, like the Paladines are they're new. They're happening. Fortunately, he got some background art so we could do the third gens. I forgot, there was another one which we're adding. I forget who else. I'd love to see like the Fracks. I think that'd be great. Especially with the submarines. I think that'd be kind of cool. But anyhow, I think that's, at this point, it's like water under the bridge. There's no way to change it. Yeah, I like the Fracks. They're kind of cool. Though again, you know, I prefer Saltorians and Andromedans. But anyhow. So, but he said that's not happening. Given that fact, this actually to get to the actual point I'm trying to get to, which is the whole idea. Okay, we got the third gens. We got the way it's currently designed. And actually, it's one thing I wanted to do. Give me a sec. Boys and girls and children of all ages. Oh, sorry. I want to do one thing, which is I want to actually bring up. Don't forget this. Type, we would not have be having these issues this evening. Give me a sec. I will be doing a quick change in. Okay, oops, I did not mean to do that. Let me. Okay. I'm going to do this. I'm going to log out, log in. Give me a sec. What I'm planning on doing is actually, let's bring up. So, what I want to discuss is improving the third gens. And to do that, what I want to do is actually, let's bring up. Two of them. Let's first bring up a simple one. It's going to be Andromeda Cobra. And also, let's bring up Federation. Let's bring up Federation something. Say, light carrier. Okay, forgot. Let's close refit in that one. Okay, good. Okay, now SSDs. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, and let's Give me a sec here, because I know that the people in the talk show can't see this, but if they want to see it, they can move over to the stream. Give me a sec here. Went to this, and then this entire screen, and that looks probably goofy at the moment, but whatever. Okay. Now, this is how the Andromedans look. And this is how the Federation looks. Now, the question is, now, I'm sure you see these, which I think is a neat idea. Which is, of course, the boxes. If we want to, actually, these boxes could be elongated all the way down. And I think that would be fine. That's why one of the things that I did a while back, which was, because I liked the idea, which was to support elongated rectangles. So what happens is, okay, let's just do this. Let's just show this. Now, let's just go 10 points of damage to show that. And see how it turns red and gives you a kind of a, whatchamacallit, a progress bar kind of thing. And obviously it's 14 points left. And as the red fills up, your shield gets lower and lower and lower. Obviously, I could do it the opposite direction and only show how much, because the red means it's full, and then as it goes down, the shields go lower and lower and lower. There actually was an idea from somebody, which was the idea was arcs. Change these from being boxes into arcs. Like here, from like here to here, how that shows an arc here to, pick a point here, so like here to here, have an arc there, have an arc here, have an arc here. Basically, the whole idea is to show an actual shield around the ship. And I think that would be a great idea. That's one thing that actually I do want to look into is how would you do that? Because obviously on the SSD, you'd actually have to, in the middle here, you have to mark a spot. Go, okay, the center point for the SSD is like here, click. And that would be recorded in that case. And then, okay, then you have to define what is the either have it as an ellipse, which I think is probably people might be looking for, though obviously it makes it easier if it's circular, because if it's a plain circle, it makes it a lot easier. But I think I have to look to see how most shields are actually shown. But that's something that could be, that's one improvement that could be shown. Now, the complaint that Ted actually had about the third gen SSDs is that it made him hard for him to look at an SSD and have a good idea of what the damage, how much the ship looked, how well it looked. And I understand that because of these are just numbers. It would be easier if you could have, like, this bar is 12, 15 long. This one's 15 long. you know, rear hull is four. Maybe you have a box, which is like kind of a 2x2. Basically, regenerate the second gens, but without the boxes. The top part about that, of course, is that the beauty of these small boxes is that you actually can see the background image that is lies behind them. That's the good part. The bad part, as Ted points out, is it makes it more difficult to get a feel of how badly damaged your ship is. For example, if you have no labs left and no forward hull left and no cargo left, that's a good bit of your ship. That's what? That's 32 points of damage on your ship. And I'd have to calculate this out. Now, what we might want is a little bar here, which is basically a bar which shows, gives you a general status of your ship. Meaning, of all the internals I have on the ship, how many internals do I have left? Because I think that will give you a better picture of the general status of the ship. Because of, now, when it comes to weapons, yeah, you'll have an idea of how many weapons you still have left. And obviously, again, the tough part about that, again, is knowing how many weapons you have left out of how many you had to start with. But in some cases, does that really matter when it comes to how many did you start with? It's how many you have left. If you had two drones to begin with, and you show that you have one drone rack left, doesn't matter that you had two to begin with. No. In my mind, it only matters possibly in the case of dual situations where you want to have an idea of how much damage you, instead of taking your current weapons and calculating how much damage you can do, you would, with a dual situation, usually you assume that if equal PvP is created and you cut the amount of weapons in half, you have half as much firepower as you previously had. Now, the question is, how do you know you only have half, 50%? You don't. Makes it more difficult. Like, if you do this, like this one. And that one. Okay. So you got two gone, and you have two left. Now, and you have to kind of assume, because you see that it's 50% of your, you know, if you have good, decent special ranging, you got two left out of four. And you can see the two there, and it's approximately 50%, so you should have an idea. Now, this is a little more difficult because... See, now that's five. Now, the thing is, you actually have 12. That's 5 out of 12. Now, it's hard to tell with 5 out of 12 that, oh, hey, wait a minute. Actually, I have 7 more left. Actually, that means there's 5 left, not 5 damage. All right. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Which means I marked down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. I marked down 7. So there's 5 left. So I have a hard time really guessing it. Oh, you know what? I have less than half my health boxes left. But again, the question comes to being, how useful is that information? You know, I understand how this is, it's important to have a feel for how much of your ship is left, you know, but the question is, what can we do to improve that situation? You know, cause that's why with like Cobra, you have the panels, you have four panels here, you got three panels here, you know, nice big thing. Then you have your batteries on this side, the degradation, which is actually, as you notice, it's a little different than other things because of degradation for this is not degradation. It's degradation in energy. Both of them have to be shown. So that's why you have a split here. How much degradation you have, how much energy do you have? It's really kind of crazy. And of course, you have individual batteries. So, I understand the issue. The question is, how do we solve the problem? In my mind, I currently don't have a good feeling for how you could improve the situation without recreating basically old SSDs without lines, you know, because if you had the old SSDs but you just remove all the lines, that would give you a good idea spatially. That's okay, how much you have left. You might not know, well, you would know the exact numbers because it would show you. But again, to me, the difficulty that is on this one here if these are special, so honestly. These, I don't think matter when it comes to the sensor, scanner, damage control, and excess damage. Excess damage matters, but the other three do not matter. I don't think anyone actually looks at the track and discusses whether their sensor track is too damaged, or their scanner track is too damaged, or the damage control track is too damaged. Now you don't think about that. You just know what your current one is, and if you're really interested to what is below this, edit the ship, bring it up, and then you can see it's 666. Then 5, 3, 1, and then finally sensor 0. So that's what the track actually is. But I don't think it matters. I really don't. Now, again, I understand that for the rest of the boxes, it doesn't give you a good idea spatially. But the issue, as I mentioned, is the background image. If you make these all the same size, you'll get back to the Federation Commander. And give me a sec here. And I should be able to bring up, because we saw the Federation Commander. Let's bring up Federation Commander room. And let's add a piece here. Let's bring up BCJ. Okay. Now, close. Okay. This is my ship. Now, this is what we get. If you have the boxes the same expanded, which is you have this little, you have this shadow behind everything. And so you barely see the image behind it. Now, does it give you a better idea spatially how much is left? Yeah, it does. But the question is, okay, oops. Let me, dun, dun, dun. Compare these two. Yeah, they're different ships. Ignore that part. But you have this cleaner interface over here. The boxes are cleaner. You see a lot more of the background image, which is really nice. And then you compare it to this one. Now, the background image obviously is grayed out. There's no color to it. But also you have all these boxes on top of it. So what you get this huge number of boxes, and, you know, yes, it gives you a better idea of when you have damage. For example, let's give this one, let's give 30 boxes. So now you can see you have seven boxes left here. And if you, it's doing a 30. I'm not gonna really matter. I'm just gonna flip through this real fast. Okay. So you got with all the colored in boxes. With that, I'll admit you have probably a better picture of where you stand. Now, to be honest, I've gotten used to these third gens, so I actually kind of enjoy them. But I have to agree back to the original point. Now, the question always is, what can we do to improve it? Because yeah, I've been rolling around the same thing issue for the past 10 minutes, and I'm sorry. But I don't see a way to make it so that this can be more spatially aware visually without going back to this. Without going back to all these boxes just covering the background, that beautiful background image that we're given. Maybe what I'll do is I'll take the Federation Light Carrier for maybe this, you know, do it like this weekend, possibly show it to you next week to see, you know, okay, show you those boxes and what it would look like. So we can have a comparison of those two, of having, so this looks more like this. You know, we have the boxes are as big as, like, this is, one box will be a certain size, and then we'll multiply that by three. And say how much, and possibly do the same thing here. I have to figure out a calculation. Should be easy enough to do. So this actually gets much larger. Probably goes from here to here. This probably goes from here down to here. This, you know, really large. This shield probably has to be moved down here, go across the bottom, and all that kind of thing. So you can have an idea of, okay, you have all these, because what's going to happen is all this white, is going to have all this white covering all of this background image. Now, there's actually if I recall correctly, there's the ability to select a different background color. Instead of choosing white, you can choose some other color. Now, currently we don't have the ability to select it on kind of boxes, you know, like they have for Federation Commander, which I don't think is really a big deal. at this point. So, you know, I don't see how we can. I understand Ted's perspective, and I think I feel like if he gave it an honest try, that if he gave it an honest try, you know, give it, you know, play with it for like next five games, he would get used to it. And then, you know, yes, it would be different from playing it in real life. But the question is, how many people actually put down the board and play the game? How many people are doing it online versus, you know, in real life? Because I'll admit that my perspective might be just a little bit skewed on this. But I feel like when it comes to tactical board games, those are becoming less and less of a market compared to, you know, the collectible card games and the board games, so things like the things with the tokens and all this kind of stuff. Things like basically the Merchants of the Federation, which will be coming out soon in, I'm not sure what you call it. Because I guess you have to call it like almost a beta test to a certain degree. Because with Merchants of the Federation, Steve Cole, you know, is basically going to be putting it out there for sale in e-form. You know, completely electronic. No hard pieces. Basically, if you want to play it, you have to gather up your pieces yourself. And then if enough people buy the e-copy, he said around 100, then they figure there's a good enough market and for it, and then they'll actually invest in a Kickstarter campaign to actually see if enough people actually put their money where their mouth is and buy it. And I'm going to be honest here when it comes to the Merchants of the Federation. I will buy, I'm going to get a copy of the Merchants of the Federation for free, but that's only because Steve Cole promised me a copy. So if you were listening last week, you know that he did that. And I did not ask for it. He volunteered. So in my mind, I will still look at it. I will examine it. I will try to play it. And if I find issues with it, because that's another thing that it is kind of a beta test. Because as Steve Cole pointed out last week, and that is that the biggest issue that he had when he got into RPGs, when he created Prime Directive, is that Steve Jackson went, "What are you doing? You're creating a book with rule numbers." And Steve Cole's like, "Well, what's wrong with that?" And it's like, "No, RPG players don't want rule numbers." Okay. So he had to remove all the rule numbers and just have it so that it was pages and chapters referenced. Before it comes to rules between, you know, any references from one rule to another rule. Because I think both him in his mind and in my mind, it's kind of important that you have reference to other rules when they're related. So I'm gonna play it, you know, and if I find there's issues with the game, because Lord knows with the kind of mini convention, it's kind of a game club that we have twice, that we get together twice a year, which is awesome, and I still like to go every single time I get an opportunity. Only time I could not go was for this past Gamers of Winter, which I have not skipped one of these things for years, but I just could not make it this one time, and I felt really bad because I really wanted to go. But I played these other kind of games, you know, the card, you know, Terraformers of Mars, all these different kinds of games outside of tactics. And Lord knows, there aren't that many people that actually are interested in playing tactics games at that convention, at those, at that gaming group. But Merchants of the Federation, I think, would be interesting to see how that plays. The big question, obviously, is I'm hoping that he, obviously, the one thing with the ebook version is they're going to have at least the graphics available so people can create their own boards. Even if a lot of what they do is they print out a sheet, which you can do. You can probably get it like a Kinko's, where you can print out this huge map is what you can do. Or buy a map. Hey, you might want to do something from, who was it? I wonder if, give me a sec here, because the question is, okay, Dave doesn't remember off the top of his head. He might remember, and he just doesn't realize I was asking about there are maps out there where you actually are printed maps, and what you, they're meant to be drawn on. And I forget who did it last time. We had it as part of, I think some of the ones we looked at were part of the Christmas special that we had in December. Pfft, big surprise. In December for Christmas. Shocker. But anyway, and have it so that, you know, we can set the board up. Might have to draw on it to say, okay, there's these space lanes from here to here. You'll do that. Have tokens or use counters or use ships. You know, if I get it and it requires this many pieces, maybe buy some cheap versions on Shapeways. You know, the low cost versions, and spend maybe $100 or something like that on count on what I would consider, you know, game pieces, and not paint them, but at least have them look like the ships. They'd be poor quality, but it's a start, and it'll look like the way it should look. So I don't know what the game is actually going to look like, though. It's a trading game, so it should be interesting to see how it all turns out. It's called a train game. The whole idea, I think, is that you have these space lanes where you do all your trading between the bases and territories and all that kind of thing. You run into different issues, from pirates to blockades to other things, you know. And as Steve Cole mentioned, you know, they had this Klingon base out in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, it's like, okay, why is that there? You know, why do you even have that on the board? Because if you don't have it, why do you have it on the board? If there, based on the whole idea of being to get to there, it's high risk. But if there's high risk, there's high payoff. It's if you ever played Stocks and Bonds, this is showing my age, created by Avalon Hill back in the day. This is when I was a teenager. So this was back in the 80s. Yeah, 30 years ago. More than 30 years ago. I really got to stop thinking about that. But anyway, there was like Stryker. Stryker was a really high risk stock to own, because it could go each period that where you actually would buy stocks or sell stocks, it could go up really high or it could go down. It could plummet really quick, you know. And then you have some other ones which are a little less volatile. And then you had bonds which were just, you know, settled. You know, you always got a certain amount every single turn. And that's the way this Merchants of the Federation is going to be, where you, depending upon the trade route, you can have more risk but a higher payoff if you're successful. Now, obviously, if you're not successful, then all of the money you just put towards it goes out down the tubes. But you, that's the risk you take, you know? So, it should be interesting how that game turns out. But anyhow, I think, you know, that should be interesting to see how Merchants of the Federation turns out. And again, even here's the thing. I'm going to be honest here. Even if Steve Cole wasn't giving me a copy, I would buy it. Because that's the kind of game I want to play. Especially because I think it's one of those games that I think I can get other people that I know in this gaming group to play. Because that's the kind of game that they're interested in. They're interested into simple strategy. They're definitely interested in strategy, because strategy for chess, you know, it's strategy for playing poker. You know, there's strategies involved in playing different games. You know, same for tactics. You know, it's just set of rule, sort of things that you do. You know, and that work. Strategy, you know, overall overarching plan. Now, given that, you know, I think I could get, especially if I can get it in time, and I can then possibly get together the materials, I might be able to get some people involved. As I said, first I have to read through the rules and see if I actually like it, and I might be interested, and then even play without the pieces, and then maybe if I get interested enough, I'll buy a set. I'll create a board game from a set of pieces that. From maybe Shapeways and some other stores, possibly have to get like tokens, you know, spend a bit of money on getting it all set up. Because heck, I might even be able to get my daughter involved. My daughter loves playing games, which, as I mentioned before, she, my youngest child, she's 21 years old. I'm sorry, I'm 54. I'm allowed to. Not 54, I'm 53. I'm 53 years old. I'm allowed to call my 20-year-old child a child, because she's still much younger than I am. But that my 20-year-old daughter gives me hope when it comes to the selling and buying of physical games, board games, card games, all these kind of games. She and her friends give me hope that this is not going to go all electronic. Of course, I'm going to be honest with you. My daughters are a little weird. At least I think they're weird in this category. Which, how many of you, back in the day, just let's say 5 years ago, maybe up to 10, somewhere between five, in the past 5 to 10 years, when we started having ebooks, and we bought a lot of our books now using, we read them on tablets, we read them on e-readers. We don't buy physical books. How many of you thought, you know, that everyone was now going to buy electronic books? No one's going to buy physical books. Why do you buy a physical book? You have to have to fill up your shelves full of these dead trees. I still buy physical books, but those physical books are limited to certain kinds of books for me. Usually they're either programming, or they are religious. One of those two, where they're knowledge. When it comes to fiction, I read fiction. I use e-readers. You know, there's one book I'm actually reading on my iPad. which is an interesting one, called The Way of a Pilgrim. It's actually kind of a religious fictional book. It's an interesting genre, because I'll just mention real quick and then I'll get off. And that is that it seems to be fiction that is, it's a, almost like a way of teaching people about, in this case, the big thing is the pilgrims. The pilgrims are learning about praying. And it seems like, with reference of real books, of other real books, and it's mentioned in this piece of fiction, but, and it's telling you how he learns how to pray, and, you know, different things. And he's a pilgrim. He goes from city to city around Russia, and he learns more about these from different elders, and they talk about it and the different things he finds out. And it's almost like, to me, it's kind of a different genre in that it's a kind of religious genre, which is fiction, but it's like using a story to teach. And that seems to be its own, to me, at the moment, that seems to be its goal. Because, because what you're reading is just about the wanderings of a pilgrim in Russia, and all the people he meets up with, of the people he meets up with. But through it all, it all comes back to learning, basically being almost like a religious, you know. So it's like, you know, wow, you know. That's why I find it, that's why I call it a genre, because it seems like really interesting. It's possible, obviously, this was written in Russian, and I've got English translation, of course, because I can't read Russian. Big surprise. But to me, I'm makes me wonder if that was a thing in Russia, or possibly even around Europe, where you'd. This was a way of writing, you know, except instead of an undertone being like a moral of the story and things like that, where it has religious undertones, you can see the Christianity beneath it, like the Lion in the Wardrobe. I think that's it. Narnia, based on Narnia. Which, if you understand Christianity, you understand how, you know, it's the line is foretelling of a lot of Jesus, of Christ himself, you know. Though it's, you know, you can see it, basically. You can see the Christian undertones of the whole story. And that it's still a wonderful story, though. You know, and people see it; it's wonderful. I enjoyed it. So anyway, getting back to it. So, it should be interesting for the Merchants of the Federation and seeing how that whole thing works out. Moving on to the last topic for this evening, and this is actually one of the topics for this evening, not just the ramblings of me. And that was another topic for this evening I want to discuss really quick, because I know we've talked about it in the past month or so, actually 2 months, I think it's about this point, which is the whole idea of Speed SFB. Now, here's the question. Can it be done? Because that's one of the things I brought up, and this was frustrating. Because I brought it up in the discussion board, and I know there's quite a few of the hardcore SFB players. Peter Bakia, Ted Fay, some other ones. I think Stephen McCann's still around. I mean, check the discussion board. I'm not sure how many people check the discussion boards these days and not just focus on Facebook. To be honest, I don't know. But anyhow, I brought up the whole idea of speed SFP. You know, say, okay, well, okay. I'm going to do this. Don't mind me. I'm just for you on the YouTube feed. I'm just gonna have something a little more tame. But I'm just bring this up, which is this online client program priorities. Okay, this is what this was my proposal. My proposal is. There were two questions I posted, which is, okay, what time limit should I put? You know, that was question one. Question two, what should happen if the time runs out? Now, my current thoughts were movement, you have 30 seconds. And again, this was all for the duel situation where you actually are doing a duel. You know, to me, a duel makes sense. Outside of a duel, when it comes to fleet actions, you can't put that kind of time limits on things because of it's a totally different character all together. I'm gonna bring up this for you. You know, what are the time limits and what happens if the time runs out? Now, time limits as Ted Fay mentioned, I was like, why don't you just have a dialogue that where people can decide on time limits? And obviously, if we decide as tournament people, you know, it's say we're going to do it for tournaments, that we will have time limits on it. We can set those time limits, and then the players then would use it, just like the whole idea of call for fire. Don't get me started on that, the pure versus pure impulsivity. Don't get me started on that. I can ramble on for another half hour on that topic alone. But moving onward, 30 seconds for each person, and then if you don't decide, you go straight ahead. You have 30 seconds to decide. If in 30 seconds you can't figure out what you want to do, you're moving straight ahead. That's assumed that you are going to be moving. I'm not worried about the whole idea of heading on non-movements because, let's be honest here, that is a 1 in 1,000 happenings. It's just a rare thing because normally you would never do that for the plain simple reason that if you head, you have to go that way the next time you move. Period. In theory, anyway. There's only one situation which I have not looked, I just thought of, and it might be a situation where that might not be the case, which is if you hit and then stop and then tack. Because, yeah, when you tack, you know, when you stop, you have to move forward. You lose your side slip mode and your turn mode when you stop. But anyway, okay, so you go straight. Impulse activity, you have 30 seconds to decide on an impulse activity and announce it. Now, that might be a little harsh. That might be a little short. This is why I want to bring up the people to mention about. I think Mark here is kind of out crazy. And obvious one would be new activity. Okay. Relatively simple solution. You know? One of the solutions where I don't think anyone would disagree with either one of those. You know, because obviously if you're around the wall, you don't want to run into it. So you better make your decision pretty quick. 30 seconds is actually, if you really think about it, sit still for 30 seconds. And I'm willing to bet you that will seem like an awfully long time. Now, the one thing about these timers, what I would hope, what I would want is if you have 10 seconds left, pop up a notification saying you got 10 seconds left, and then 9, 8, you know, and so forth, and have a countdown for you. Now, I'm not sure if that would be a good thing or a bad thing, because obviously if the countdown can actually make you more nervous and then more indecisive, and might make you screw up. So this, you know, this, you might want to increase this to like a minute, because it might take you 15 seconds or a few seconds, let's say 5 seconds to decide. It might take you another minute to actually use the client interface to change, to actually enter in your action. Now, this one I thought was kind of the most controversial overall, which was EA, you know, 5 minutes minimum, you know, and then if you don't do it in 5 minutes, then you're set to the minimum speed from the previous turn, assuming you have enough power, and then none of your weapons are charged, and you go from there. Which is, I know that is a real harsh penalty. In my mind, it's really harsh. And I went, yeah, okay. The penalty I think might be harsh, so it might be better to give a better time limit. But we want things to keep moving. It's the problem. Now, obviously, I calculate this out. If you people extend these things as long as possible, in theory, let's say you move 16 times, that would be that'd be 8 minutes to move a turn. That's a pretty long time. And then you have it definitely for another 32, all 32 impulses. That's another 16 minutes. So you could actually take 24 minutes for get through a turn, which actually is not bad if you really think about it. Now, 30 seconds. Now, the question for movement always is, okay, each person has 30 seconds to move. So, and what happens with seeking weapons and things like that, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But the problem is I had with this is that I didn't have anybody really respond that much. We have Mark, who was screaming about some other things, because he thinks that, you know, the SMB Online is old, and I agree it's old. But he was saying, oh, you could do everything without coding, without a bit of coding, and you can make a better interface. And I go, nope. Actually, the funny part is I did a really quick thing last week when it comes to, I think it was Game Maker. And Game Maker, he said, oh, you can use Game Maker and you can create a game from it. It's like, I looked at Game Maker, I watched some guy for a few, almost 5 minutes, working on a game. And guess what? What's the first thing he... Not the first thing, but he says, okay, well, you have to create the sprites, you have to create basically the artifacts that are going to be used as part of the game, which always are, to me, that is where you're going to spend a lot of your time, is creating the art. And some people say, oh, you already got the art. No, I don't already have the art. Where do I have the art? And it's like, oh, we got all these 3D models. Well, what 3D models? You know, even though if you grab all the current 3D models that are currently available, you still have a very limited set of ships. Completely limited set of ships. And the question is, how do you tell the difference between the ships? You know? But anyhow, I would love to have it. The fun part is that Mark here is saying that time with a lot of personal player, that is why we use a chess timer. I'm not sure what that means. What is a chess timer? You know? I have to check to see what is a chess timer? How does a chess timer work? The only reason I didn't use it internally when I started because that was, well, it didn't allow me to use a chess clock. It was a long time ago. I'm pretty sure we used 20 minutes for EA and 30 minutes for decision making during the impulse procedure, which I have a hard time believing. So anytime you say stop during the impulse procedure, you hit the chest clock, the rest of the game works just normally. I'm thinking what he meant by this is 20 minutes, I think it's way too long for EA. I really do. You should be able to complete your energy allocation, the worst case scenario, 10 minutes. 30 minutes, I think 30 minutes he meant over the turn. Meaning, you basically used a chess clock. And I have to look up to see what does that mean. But anyhow, let's say that, okay, this can definitely improve and speed up SAP play if we have actually time limits on it. But is that the only solution? In my mind, I don't think that's the only solution. But for SAP, it's the only solution. Because I'm not quite sure that is the only solution. What I would love to do, and the tough part is finding people who'd be willing to do this, which is movement. Forget it. We're not going to do individual impulses anymore. You have to plot your movement for the next 8 impulses, and then it's set. You know, you have to guess what your opponent's going to do for the next move for the next 8 impulses. And you both have to do this, so it's not like it's unfair. Is it new and different? Yes, it is. Is it non-standard when it comes to people have gotten so used to free movement? Yes, it is different than the free movement. I just want to look at something real fast, and then I will probably be let me look. Movement. There it is. Okay. Almost. There it is. Okay. That is back in the day. We had what was called pre-plotted movement. Under the pre-plotted movement system, level C1 under C.33 below, players must specifically plot movement of their units for the current turn. In advance, during energy allocation, note seeking weapons are not plotted, but they follow the designated target. Then, of course, there is 3.321, which is half turn plotting, plot movement for each turn midpoint, you know, for the next 16 impulse after half the impulse of a given turn, 16 have been played, plot movement and fill the energy allocation for the next turn. This will require more inductive reasoning and shrewd second guessing than the basic system. It is possible that at the start of a turn there may be not sufficient energy to perform all planned activity. In the event the programmed energy expenditures must be reduced to level power available, i.e. the process of D22 energy balance due to damage must be followed under until the imbalance is corrected. This is obviously a very complex procedure. Only a few players use it, i.e. D22. And then interesting, You have seen that 30 different. There are several levels of plotted movement under the more restrictive levels. All movement-based activities must be plotted under more liberal levels. Many actions can be freely made freely. Note that the various forms of segmented plotting are variations of all levels, not a level themselves. Also note the energy allocation and movement plotting are related, but not the same. Allocating energy for a high energy current is not the same as making a turn at a specified point. And, you know, and it talks about, you know, modified free movement can, and then, which is always interesting, standard free movement, then liberal plotted movement, then standard plotted movement, plotted shuttle movement, optional shuttle movement plotting, and then restricted mind placement. There are certain things that are always plotted, and it talks about all through that. I think that would be a great idea, which is actually using plotted movement. You know, pre-plotted movement in this case, basically you plot the whole turn, which I think is overall kind of nutty. But I could have sworn, let's see, do I have it? I don't think so. No, I don't see it. I thought I might have the designer's edition with me. I'm not sure if I might have bought it. I might not have bought it. I think I did bought it. I'd have to find where it actually is plotted. So I think plotted movement might actually speed things up greatly. If you have less people actually thinking about movement or making decisions about each point of movement. Now, I understand with FENCOM, that was the whole reason of you have 8 impulses and then you have the subpulses. The idea was not to cut back on the movement decisions. It was to cut back on the activity decisions. The whole idea of if you cut back on the activity decisions, that will speed up play. Overall, I disagree with that assumption. The analysis of it, that if you cut back on the number of impulse activity, you actually speed up play because you cut back on those decisions. I think the most decisions that people have the hardest time with is free movement. It's not the activity. Because, at least for me, activity it's rare that it takes a long time. You've got an idea, at least for me. I have an idea of what I want to do this turn. That, okay, I want to get to range 5 or closer and fire and turn away. Now, if he does something that will obfuscate that, then it might require me a little bit of time to actually think about what I want to do next. But most of that is going to be driven by movement. So I think if we can speed up movement itself, then you can actually speed up play. Forget about the impulse activities. I think it's more of the movement itself. If you can speed up movement, then you've got gold right there. And that's why I think the whole idea of pre-plotted movement, remove the ability to think about it. I'll think about it, you think about it, I'll see if I can outguess you. And then moving on for there. You know, I, as I mentioned before, that's why I originally loved Starmada when I was first introduced to it back, way back, is it 3 versions ago? I think it's like 3 versions ago. That I've thought about the pre-plotted movement, and I was like, wow, I love this. You know? And that was fantastic. So everyone would pre-plot. Everybody would pre-plot their movement because it was all secret. And then after, and that what you were doing, then when you started your turn, you then everybody would reveal. There was no initiative. You all did it in secret. So you didn't have to worry about initiative. You revealed it, boom, you moved your ships. Would you, and it, as I said, it's a guessing game. And that, to me, that is the most fun. Is when you try to outguess your opponent. Yes, we still have that in SCB when it comes to free movement. But usually it's about what actions they're going to take. Not the movement that they're going to do, but the actions and when they're going to do these actions. So, I think that we could actually speed up play by forcing a pre-plotted movement. Eight impulse pre-plotted movement. Now, obviously, the gotcha in that one is the only caveat I would allow where you could break that is if you do ahead. And the reason why I say that, and this is the only reason I say this, is because a high energy turn it's possible that it might not be plotted. And the question is, I would allow for that specific instance because how many times are you actually going to hit? You might hit what? Once a turn. If that, once a game is most likely what you do. So it's going to be a very rare event. And the whole idea of a hit is it's an emergency maneuver. Not normally planned, but it's an emergency maneuver that people, you know, say, okay, be ready for, we gotta be ready for doing this. But you know that usually coming into the turn. Or if you have planned on coming into turn, you know it's a possibility of your reserve power. But, you know, the instant that it happens, it's going to change. So with that, I think we will wrap up for this evening. Had a nice little talk about, of course, speeding up play and such. Rambled on about the emergence of the Federation, which I can't wait to see. And, of course, talking about the wonderful third gens and what can we do to improve them so they're more accepted by the community. I understand that people aren't used to them, but I really think that people gave them a chance. They would get used to them, and they might even have some good input into them. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.